Howdy, everybody. Bob Tallman for No Spin Rodeo. No politics, no BS, just hard-hitting news and rodeo commentary from two of the most trusted sources in our sport. Kendra Santos, Tommy Joe Lucia. Listen up. Here we go.
Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 102. This is No Spin Rodeo. Tommy Joe Lucia here with the first lady of pro rodeo journalism, Kendra Santos, and a very good friend of mine and also a fellow broadcaster, Drew Stew. We're going to talk about everything timed event. The timed event championship just concluded, and how could we be remiss if we didn't talk about it and talk about the winner, who's actually related, not to me. Nobody in my family can do anything that good. No, Anthony Lucia would never make it through that. He could only talk through it. Hello, Kendra. Hello, Drew. Welcome to episode 102. How are you guys today?
Outstanding. Thanks for having me, guys. Kendra, how excited are you still?
Wowee. You know what is one of the just most amazing things is like the people are so nice. Mm-hmm. And like I, in the last few days, it's like, I mean, Trevor Brazil and Ace Berry and Clay Tryon and Chris Libert and Jimmy Rodriguez. And I mean, just Tuff Hedeman. People are just so nice. Knowing, you know, friends who know what this kid has been through to get back into this situation. So anyway, thank you both. We appreciate it.
Well, the reason, so we brought Drew on, I've got to admit, and I think there's probably a lot of listeners on No Spin Rodeo. Now, we do have the Santos contingency in No Spin Rodeo, which are heavily weighted in the timed event world, heavily weighted in the contestant part of the game. And a lot of these guys, not all of them, know kind of what this event's about. I grew up in this sport. I've heard about it. I've read about it. I know the overreaching pieces of this. But I thought, and then we'll get into Taylor's win, but I thought this would be a perfect time for us to kind of, for me to ask some questions, to kick it over to you two. What is this event? When did it start? And why? Do people practice all year long? Well, first off, what is this? Drew, I'm going to let you kick off. What's this event? Give us the nuts and bolts. What is it?
It is the hardest damn event in rodeo, period. Bottom line, it is the name Iron Man is not just a name that somebody came up with because it's kind of hard. It is the epitome of a mental and physical grind over the course of five rounds. Now, for those people out there that don't know what that entails, it's a timed event deal, hence the name Timed Event Championship. So you got a head of steer, heel of steer, rope a calf, steer wrestle, and steer trip. And you do it twice a day. The first day on Thursday, you do it once, then twice a day, and you end on Saturday night, and that'll be your, you know, a total of 25 head, five in each round, and you do it back to back to back. So people might say, well, I can go head of steer, rope a calf, heel of steer, bulldog, and trip. Yeah, I bet there's very few people that have ever even done it in a full day, let alone twice a day, back to back to back within, you know, 10, 20 minutes of each one. You head and then you come back around. There's only 25 guys to start with. So you head and then you come right back around and you have to tie down rope. And then you come right back around and got a heel. And then you come right back around and you got a bulldog. And then you come right back around and you got a steer rope. And it's tough. It's very, very tough. It's really, it happens relatively fast. You've got a ton of people down in the tunnel helping you out. And it's just, it's, I really appreciate this phone. I tried to get in about 15 years ago because it's the biggest test in our sport of a timed event guy. And you don't necessarily have to be a Trevor Brazil to be in it. you know, like Stetson Jorgensen and some guys that roping is not their primary event can still come to this deal and show up and shine. And like Paul David Tiernan, I mean, everybody there is there for a reason. And it's just, I don't know, man. I love this event more than any other event in the industry. And that's the truth. Like I said, I tried to get in it myself, and there's nothing else like it. It's tough, and it's awesome. And you got to give your brother a little bit of credit because he is announcing it at least. So
he is, and he could probably do a couple of them.
Now, you dang right, so, he could. Yeah.
So the thing about it is so if I heard you right, there's 25 players in the game. Mm-hmm. Let's go through the order of the disciplines again, or events, whatever you want to call it.
Okay.
First is healing or
heading.
So you head first, mm-hmm. then you tie down.
Yep.
Then you heal.
Yep.
Then you bulldog.
Yep.
Then you steer rope.
Yep.
Now, isn't it very inconvenient that they didn't have you head and heel back to back? They could make it a lot easier if you healed your five head when you're in a groove. So this is the jack. You've got to be a jack of all trades. And from the timed event perspective, now, quick question, Kendra, maybe you can answer this. Do they use all their own horses, or do these guys have a whole team of guys that come there and provide horses and education and support and advice? How does it typically work for one of these 25 guys?
I think like part of the preparation and the gamesmanship or whatever is rounding up your human and horse helpers. And very rarely does a guy bring all his own horses. Yeah. That's very rare. Imagine keeping horses around for one event a year. I think to me, a total uniqueness, this is like a throwback event, and that it is a 25 header, which is unheard of. There's nothing else in the realm, but it's also in a 600 foot arena over a very long score. And none of that has been compromised over the years. The tradition has been upheld. And, you know, in today's world of single event specialists, it's such a nod to old school cowboy shit, really. I mean, and horsemanship, you cannot luck out and win this event. You can't draw the best one over 25 head. It's not possible. And so I think the pride has everything to do with the prestige of it, to be able to do. And I mean, it'll blow your skirt up easy, even if it looks really easy on the TV or whatever. Things happen. You guys, you know, you've seen it, Drew, like it's not over till it's over. Things happen. Curveballs happen. And the conditions are as cowboy as they come, period. And yeah. So the one thing I think was meant a lot to Taylor. Last year, John Miller is a multiple time world champion team roper, and he's the nephew of, world champion team roper Ben Johnson. Also Academy Award winning cowboy Ben Johnson, both Hall of Famers in the inaugural class of 79. But John Miller moved from Cave Creek, Arizona back to Oklahoma for about 6 years to help the Gaylords open the doors on the Lazy E and get it all rolling. And he told Lane and Taylor and I at the Cal Poly Hall of Fame inaugural inductions last year that my dad was an inspiration to the actual concept, the original concept of it. And it was so cool for us to hear this, you know, she's like, this event was made for Frank Santos. And so that was really meant something so much, because after school every day when my kids were growing up, Papa Frank was out in that arena with them every single day. And so to know that is special to our family.
Now, before we leave the nuts and bolts, for those people that may not are just hearing this, it's an aggregate, right? 25 mm-hmm. head, you add your times together, the lowest overall time is the winner, mm-hmm. correct?
Yep.
Okay. Now, before we dive into this year's event, give me some history on this. Tierney. Who are some of the past champions? When did this start? Do we know, guys? You, one of you do know. In 85. And what did it pay out in 85? Do you know?
That I don't know. Do you know that, Drew?
I don't know.
I know that for, I do know that there for quite a few years there it paid $50,000 and that now it pays $100,000. But I know that Leo Camarillo was the first ever champion in 1985. I think they said this was the 42nd annual. And I think, I know that Trevor Brazil, the winningest cowboy of all time, is the winningest time to make cowboy of all time with 7 titles. The Tierney family is the winningest family between the three of them. Paul, the dad, won 4, and Paul David has won 3, and Jess Tierney has won 1. So they've won 8, and now, I don't know, Paul Tierney is Taylor's father-in-law. So, I mean, it's just kind of a cool thing. I do think that there's something on the old school throwback stuff that a lot of people have forgotten or are too young to realize that so much of rodeo history started in California. And the fact is that California has won more time event titles than any other state, 10 of them. And Leo won 2, Daniel Green won 3, Kyle Luckett won 2, Jordan Catcher won 1, and Taylor's won 2. So the winningest state, I think that might surprise a lot of people, maybe. I don't know.
The winningest state in the timed event?
Yes.
Or overall?
In the whole timed event history, I'm saying.
Okay.
10 of them.
And they've got to pay $7 more a gallon of gas just a little bit. They're probably just happy to come pay $3.50 for fuel for a week or 2.
That's for sure. I got to jump in there, Kendra, because, you know, Bob and I talk about it all the time. First of all, Bob brought that up, you know, the family and all of that sitting on the desk. And, you know, Tommy Joe, a lot of people now take this for granted. And I don't know if very many people out there on the team roping, we take team roping for granted, right? Well, when the BFI started in 77, Bob tried to bring the team roping out to Denton, Texas, and it didn't work. Because team roping wasn't in Texas yet, you know? So to have that little nugget right there, a lot of that, cause they were tying the knot out here, but they weren't team roping yet. So, you know, without that influence that started in California moving back east, there wouldn't be the timed events, frankly. So yeah, California.
Right. So many people do forget that, like, Houston, San Antonio, Fort Worth, none of those had team roping. So when Leo Camarillo is winning world titles, imagine how hard it was to make a living because it wasn't a standard event. And but it's absolutely true that, you know, now most of the top 15 lives in Texas and that's where all the action is. But it wasn't like that, you know, a long time ago. And so a lot of this history is no coincidence. I mean, Jack Roddy and Harley May and John W. Jones and Ace Berry and all these people, you know, the Camarillos, they're all from California. So don't throw us all out with San Francisco and LA.
Well, or Newsom or any of that. Okay. So let's talk about the physical attributes for someone to be competitive in this. Physically enduring, right? Now, do these guys... How often in y'all's history have you seen someone that has to literally battle through injuries? Because you said there's a lot of curveballs. I would imagine that injuries are one of those. Fair?
Injuries took out a lot of guys preparing before it even started, and they had to be replaced. I mean, the world champion team roper Tyler Wade, first day of steer roping practice on the second steer, he stepped off and broke his ankle, you know? And I mean, a bunch of guys got knocked out just trying to get ready for it. And, you know, Taylor hasn't jumped a bulldogging steer since the 2023 timed event. He missed the last 2 from injuries, but, and he purposely didn't jump one before here because he's like, if I'm going to take a beating, it's going to be for
going to be there.
So,
yeah.
Really? So he never jumped a steer before his first one there.
Not in 3 years.
Holy smokes.
That's unreal. Well, Kate, you know, Casey Jones has been there, what, how many times? And he, what did he blow his knee steer wrestling that literally the day before it started?
Tuesday night.
So Zane Kilgus gets the call the day before the timed events and steps up and then ends up winning a round. Like that was super cool. Like, who's this guy? I mean, anybody that's kind of in the rodeo world, we kind of known who he is a little bit. He's great circuit cowboy and everything, but to step into the timed events is a total unknown, a rookie. Yes. The day before, like literally the day before, you get the call, hey, do you want to come to the Lazy E and do the toughest event in rodeo? And then to step up and hang in there the entire time and then to win a round. Like, hats off to that guy. Big time.
Absolutely. Hats off to that guy. A lot of times it's a last minute. I think Taylor's first invite was a last minute. He'd never run a steer open steer before. And
once you get invited, are you seated until you can't do it anymore? Who decides who comes?
So there's
politics in this too.
I don't think it's politics.
I don't think it's politics.
Oh, it's not politics, right?
Well, yeah, there's no politics. Maybe just a tick. No, they have to sell tickets, so someone picks
who gets invited, right?
Yeah, Dan Wall and his team, they kind of go through and because they do want it to be competitive, you know. And frankly, years ago, we're going through kind of a cool deal in the industry right now. Years ago, it was hard to even find. That's how bad I was. Back then, they were trying to fill it, and because there wasn't a lot of guys that would do everything, you know, so it was hard to get guys. I mean, and what we were only at 20 back then, weren't we, Kendra?
Yes,
I think the 25, it was 20 forever and 20 without the cut. So now there's a 25. Then after two rounds, we cut five and you've got 20, and then two rounds and we cut five and bring the top 15 back. So they're cuts. And there's a whole podcast we could do about how the guys feel about that. That's a whole other deal. But
it's not a true five header.
You shouldn't call it a true five header,
Kendra. If they're cutting guys, it's progressive. Hey, Skippy, stop.
It's a five head average. And it's not aggregated, it's not disciplined.
It's not fair to kick them out when it's five head. So really it starts out as a three header or two header. What'd you say? Where's the problem, they kick them out?
Listen, here's what's unanimous. The Cowboys don't like the cuts.
Yeah.
Period.
That's unanimous.
Because it's really, really, really hard to gather everything up. $3,000 entry fees, and it's a lot of heartache and hardship and financial expense just to show up with all those horses and all those helpers. And the cut is tough.
I agree on this event, this goes against what I would normally say, but on this event, I think they all should get to go to the very end. I mean, there's a lot that can happen, right? One way or another, it doesn't seem very fair to me that you go to cutting people on an endurance event. That's like telling the marathon runners, hey, the last five marathon runners on mile six, go get lemonade, you're out. That's not fair.
Anyway. So I talked to Dan about this and there's a production side of it. I mean, nobody knows that better than you, Tommy Joe, that's for sure. And I have personally, I agree with you. I've seen so many guys that were at the bottom of the pack end up in the top four or five. You know, it pays eight monies in this deal. Yeah, it's top loaded a little bit, but rightfully so, I guess. But still, to get a check and to pay your helpers and everything, you have a bad couple of first rounds. Now, granted, every timed event is different too. So you could have a timed event that, you know, this year was tougher. There was a lot of 60s this year due to the cattle, big steers, especially in the bulldog, and we took a lot of 60s. I don't know the stats on that, like if it was any worse than years past. Excuse me, but I do know that the steer wrestling steers were tougher this year. But is there politics in sport? There's definitely politics in sport. So here's the politics on the steer wrestling steers. And I'm sure this is a Kendra, jump in here, override me at any time, because I know you and I talk about this a lot. But so one thing that's cool about the timed events, if I'm a header, I can shine in the heading. If I'm a heeler, I can shine in the heeling. If I'm a tie down roper, I can shine in the tie down roping. If I'm a bulldogger, if I'm a tripper, so on and so forth. When you bring in lollipop bulldogging steers, it kind of let, like, Brody Pompano a few years ago was a 3.9 or something, a steer wrestling. Brody Pompano weighs 165 pounds soaking wet. It's a steer roper. So Lollipop steers and the Bulldog and the big guys like your Clayton Haas and Cody Dosher and those kind of guys, they go out there and they draw Lollipop steers that can't hold those big guys up. They don't get to shine in their event. So here in the last few years, that's been a topic of discussion. They bring in some bigger steers. And these big steers this year pushed everybody around. When those Bulldog and steers are pushing Will Loomis around and Clayton Haas around and Cody Dosher around, you know, and I don't know if I have ever seen Paul David Tierney not take a second go at one. And that happened this year. That was tough.
So for one thing, everybody does have to recognize with the border being closed, absolutely, it's harder to come by cattle. Number two, I will say Oates' very strong feeling about this. A lot of the old school guys thought this, the steer wrestling steers were outstanding. Here's what Oates has to say about it. Guys like him and Steve Duhon tried entering the timed event, you know, 20 years ago or whatever it was. And because the team ropers griped and brought in pooches in the steer wrestling, God bless Leo Camarillo. No one loved him more than me. He was 3-0 or whatever. Okay. Yeah. We've all seen him run. And that's so when a steer wrestler gets beat by somebody who doesn't know how to bulldog or isn't a bulldog or whatever, the steer wrestlers are eliminated. They can't. So Oates' vision for the steers would be everything as even as possible. It's fine if they run, as long as they don't have anything phony or tricky, so everybody can get them caught. If they need to slide them, so be it. He said, in a perfect world, you'd have steers where the Bulldoggers, say a Clayton or a Will in this year's scenario, would be 5 or 6 on them, you know, being Bulldoggers. The guys in the, you know, Taylor kind of people who've Bulldogged in high school and college, but, you know, not really Bulldoggers, maybe they're 8 or 10 on them. And then guys who tried to learn how to bulldog at 35 years old 2 weeks ago, they might struggle or they might be 15 or 20, but that would be fair because then if you be the ideally at the timed event, ultimate cowboy contest, got to be a horseman, got to have the horsepower, big, strong cattle in every single event is what it's all about. That's the original premise. But when some people in just certain events gripe, and like Oates said, not one guy got hurt this year in the Bulldog. Why? Because they weren't phony.
Yep.
And so, so be it if they're strong, but they weren't phony.
Yep. I agree with every, don't take anything that I said before that as a negative. I'm with you. I think big calves, big steers, when I want the Bulldoggers to have the same play that Haven Medjid had when he showed up in the calf roping. You know what I mean? Like the same, he should. So the bottom line is like, I need to shave off some seconds or I need to settle in and get my mind right. If I'm a calf roper, I go out and make my, you know, at that setup, a 10 second run. You know, we kind of, Kendra mentioned it, but Tommy Joe, it's like a Salinas, Cheyenne, Pendleton type role at these. Pendleton's not even that far. I mean, just different setup, but it's a long ways out there, and they got to go get them. I mean, if you're 13 in the tie down roping, you're doing it. You know, this year in the Bulldog, and we had a few 5 second runs, which were Clayton and Will. I think Will had a couple great runs, you know, and that's the way it should be. And then the headers, you know, we didn't have any this year. We didn't have any 4 second runs in the team roping, which we had in the past. They were big and strong, but they were dang sure even. That's
yes,
for sure.
And that makes a fair contest. And if Justin Schaefer has to heel a big, strong team roping steer, then Taylor Santos should have to bulldog a big, strong bulldogging steer. That's fair. It's fair.
Couldn't agree more.
That should be the essence of this being an all-around timed event competition. Like that, that almost to me goes without saying. I mean, I agree with you guys, and I would think, you know, but again, I will pitch out that as long as they're competing on the same type of cattle, all of them, the right winner should win. Right. If they're all I think that the anomaly here, which is what you guys are alluding to, and I'll say it for some of us that are a little slow, and that is, if you put the lollipops in there, if the calves lay down and throw their feet up, if the bulldog and steers hit their sides, then that's advantage tie down roper or bulldogger is the point. And by keeping it all big, that's good news. So we talked about the physical attributes. Is there a body frame type? And then I want to get to the mental side. Is there a body frame type that seems to do better in this? Taylor is a Gumby, right? I mean, he's
Taylor a Gumby.
Well, but I mean, he's thin and tall and. Yeah. I mean,
Taylor, I don't know what he weighs right now. He does look pretty thin. He's 6'2 or 3", and
he got big old broad shoulders, though.
He's got big old broad shoulders, but he's thin, and part of that is his food allergies. Like, he can't eat all the garbage we all eat, and, you know, when he goes to a fast food restaurant, he can order a hamburger patty, period. So he's going to be thin, and when he rides 8 or 10 horses every single day, he's going to be thin. But I don't think there's a body type because Paul Tierney, I outweigh him and he's won it four times. Paul David, I'm bigger than he is and he's won it three times. Like, you better be catty and scrappy. I know that.
But you're a steer wrestler's woman, remember?
My boys have always called me the framey mare. So
the framey mare. Things I will never call my wife.
Things you should never say. Big bone.
Wow, honey.
Never say big bone. Probably going to stick away from framing mare.
Honey.
Framing mare is not going to be a good one.
That dress makes you look like a framing mare, honey. Holy smokes.
You got birthing hips. That's a good one, too. A good one, too. Okay, back to the action. So, we've talked about the physical things, and I'm rolling through this because there's a lot to talk about. But changing disciplines, skill sets, do these guys, the mind games that the players have to play with themselves alone, right? Just keeping an even keel and not falling off the edge because it's your very best discipline and you screwed it up. I can imagine all of these things. So there's that. But is there gamesmanship between these guys? Are they jacking with each other? Like, they, timies are good about jacking with each other, except for bulldoggers, frankly.
I think there's a bro code here. I think there's so much respect between these guys. I've never seen 1 ounce of that. And the only thing I've ever heard that was a little funky and suspect from many, many years ago was that back when they used to allow contestants to be helpers for each other. And then you would hear that, you know, so-and-so, I'm just going to say Paul Hughes as one example. He went in with the lead, I think multiple times, and co-competitors who never missed. Now they could have stubbed a toe, but there was a lot of speculation and they did away with that. They no longer allow, like them to head or heel for each other because just to take away all doubt. But I don't see any jacking. Those guys, I see them all helping each other. I see them all acting like a bunch of bulldoggers back there, to tell you the truth, because I think there's so much respect for each other.
There's no, in that particular game, there's no, you know, there might be the lighthearted between buddies stuff, but there's no, the respect level between those guys, because at any minute, it could be you. If you're giving somebody shit about whatever just happened in the arena, you're up next, buddy. I mean, and it's not a matter of if at the timed events, it's a matter of when. You're not competing to not be a 60, but you are at the same time. You know what I mean? Like, it is, I think as soon as anybody gets on a high horse at that deal, the event's going to take care of you anyway. And I think that humility just brings everybody. I agree with Kendra. I'm sitting right down there on the desk and get to listen to all of those guys right there. And I've been there since like 2013 or 2014 and have never seen a cattiness. It's just the opposite. I think that's why I truly love this game, is because it is so, that group of guys back there, by the end of it, there's not one of them walking around, you know, pompous with his chest out. Everybody's beat up and, man, good job. Well, thanks. I just got through it. You know, I mean, and there's a whole lot of like tipping your hat back and going, You know, and you see that those definitely the round four and five. And I think that's very cool. I think those guys really respect each other. You know, even if they're not friends, they definitely respect each other for sure.
Now you keep referring to a 60. So the people that are on here that might not know what the hell you're talking about, what do you mean?
So instead of a no time, that if you get a no time, you get a 60. So 60 seconds adds on. Yeah,
I was going to ask that. So a no time is a 60.
Is 60 seconds. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yep. Yeah, so there's a 60-second time limit. If you go past the time limit, you just get a 60. If you know time, if you miss. Team roping's three loops. I mean, we blew over some of that stuff. You know, three loops in the team roping, standard tripping, you can set your trip twice. You can pack in the tripping. You know, if you rope one around the neck, you can pack and go up and try to rope around the horn. Same thing in the tie-down, roping two loops there. And then the Bulldoggers, if they miss their first one, they got a lot of running. A lot of running in their future because they're running down to the end of the arena, climb back on to double jump one, or they can catch them on foot.
Double jump or catch them on foot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Well, so what the mental part of this?
Oh, buddy.
Can you visually see these guys crack mentally? Have either one of you like looked and said he's toast? Just wondering.
I tell you what, Seth, so just the opposite. I think you can see the guys that settle in, like that get seated, you know what I mean? So Seth Hall this year to me, I think this is his, what, Kendra's seventh trip or eighth trip or something like that. And in the rodeo world, if you say the name Seth Hall, if you're not from New Mexico, you may have never heard of this guy. Right? And here he is against a whole bunch of name brand guys from Paul David to the Santos, anybody. Like, he's just one of those guys that's not, you know, you may not think about. But this guy came in this year, and I could just tell. I talked to him before the deal. He was on it. He was in good shape. He'd been working, and he just kept grinding, and he ended up fourth. I think he ended up fourth last year too. He doesn't take a 60. He has 160 in the steer rope, and on a steer that we all thought was tied. Like, he put a good tie on him and just things happen. And that steer gets up, it's a different conversation. This whole conversation, you know.
He ended up fifth this year, but mm-hmm. I mean, same difference. And yeah, that guy is catty and scrappy. But again, those traits, if you go down the list of who's won it, you see a lot of catty, scrappy people.
Yep.
What does fifth pay? Do we know?
Yeah, I've got it right here. So it pays $100,000 for first, $35,000 for second, $15,000 for third, $10,000 for fourth, $7,500 for fifth, $5,000, $4,500, $3,000 for eighth.
Do they get an appearance fee, or they enter for $3,000 and they're in so that it only pays that many holes, huh?
Mm-hmm.
That's yeah, top-loaded. And
then the rounds pay 3-2-1, right, Kendra? Isn't that just 3-2-1?
Yeah, I think? And what is it? It does the round pays 3,000.
Yeah, that's it. I think it's just 3-2-1. Yeah, you're not doing it for the money. I mean, first place for sure, 100,000 is great, but you know, it's I think more for the prestige of this event for sure.
Well, so I think we understand the game. Lazy is cool. Of all the places for it to be lazy, like all the little pieces that you say. Now, before we jump on, well, let's keep going. So let's talk about Taylor. Now, Kendra, of course, is a proud mom, but she's also awful humble. So that's why I definitely wanted Drew in here. I'm going to set the legwork a little bit from flying high and when not turbulence. This kid has been hurt, gets both hips and a knee replaced. Is that right, Kendra?
He didn't have replacements. But he had major surgeries on both hips and one knee. I do you want me to just tell you a little bit about that? Because it's how it all went down. I guess for the people sort of maybe wondering why he was so emotional when it was over, it's like, and it'll be a Christmas miracle if I don't get emotional right here. But I went to Nashville to both. I was at all three surgeries with him. And the thing about it is that in 2024, February 2024, his hips had been bothering him. The first time his hips started bothering him was at the NFR in 2021, and he couldn't sit down. Ask Chad Mayfield about this. He couldn't get down where he needed to be. And people, the Joe B's and different people are like, you need to get down on this cabinet. He's like, I can't. Like, I physically can't do it. And it's where the impingement, the labrums are torn. You've got just a wreck going on in your hips that won't allow you to function. And Taylor and Chad are of the body type. Tandy and Dr. Bird in Nashville explained all this stuff to us. They have the body type that... if you have that body type and you're a calf roper, a catcher, or a hockey player, you're almost absolutely going to have this problem. And so, but anyway, Taylor went and he'd been having troubles. He went, Tandy sent him, Taylor lives in Stephenville now. He sent him for some imaging work. And then Taylor took off and went and rubbed San Antone. And after he... the only chance for an appointment was the morning after he rubbed at San Antonio in Dallas with Tandy. So he rubbed his third calf and he drove all night and he went to Tandy's. And his next two stops were supposed to be Houston and the timed event that week. Kind of a big deal to a cowboy, both of those events. And Tandy said, you're not going anywhere. And so, you know, that call from him was... I mean, I could just hear his voice like, what is going on? And my first words to him were, well, you don't have cancer. but he had surgery in Nashville on one hip in March. And then he had surgery in June back in Nashville. And then he was doing the deal where he was supposed to go 2 days a week for an hour to rehab, and he was going 4 or 5 days for 2-3+ hours. I went with him a lot. Kai Hamilton was there at Brad Bettis's in De Leon PT place. And it's really a cool place because there's all these saddles from like Tuff Edelman and Jim Sharp and Ty Murray, because all those guys have been rehabbed by Brad Bettis. But anyway, but when he got really in the physical intensity of the rehab for the hips, he realized his knee was killing him. And so he went, and then he had to have major surgery in January 2025 on a knee. And then, I mean, it was 7 days after his first baby was born. I mean, it was just, and and then back to rehab. And, you know, you're 2 years out, you're a new husband, you're a new dad, how you make your money, you can't ride outside horses. And it was really hard, and he didn't physically know if he could ever return to high-level competition again. So for this to be like his coming out thing and for it to go like that, for how hard it is, it was like easy for me to understand why it was so emotional for him.
I got to jump in here and say that, you know, as a dad, I mean, you read the post that I put up and seeing that, and then Kendra... you know, my son plays college football, my stepson Isaac, and, you know, he's my kid, and he had a hip surgery on the labrum that took him out, and then an ACL surgery right before the first game a couple seasons ago, and then just had a shoulder surgery, and football is his tie down roping. And you see these kids like break down and like, I don't know if I can play the game anymore. And he's 22 years old, and that's so hard to see as a parent when football is his rodeo. I mean, he's graduated from Texas Tech and now he's at Michigan State with one season of football left. And when they say, I don't know if I can play the game because I don't know if my body can handle it, that's tough.
It's a killer. And mm-hmm. I've been through this. We have Lane and I and Taylor before. Mm-hmm. When in 2014, as a freshman, he won the college national title. Well, in 2015, he's winning the region and da 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 or whatever. And his back goes completely sideways. And Taylor being Taylor, we were at the College Rodeo in Clovis. It was before the end of the season, but it was Clovis and Coalinga. There was a doubleheader that weekend. He was physically crying. He couldn't sleep. He couldn't. I begged pain pills off of a mother that had like a tooth abscess or something. We tried putting him in a lawn chair on the bed, on the floor. He couldn't sleep. It was the most miserable, but he was determined that if he could get through those two rodeos, that he would make the college finals there. Well, so, and I remember at Coalinga, he hazed a steer for Lane, and he barely made it to the back end, and he slid off that horse, and he was just laying flat on his back on the ground. Like, it was so horrible. And then he went through a major back surgery, and then his first rodeo back was the college finals that year. And it's like this kid and his body, like he is gifted with an athlete's body, but he uses it so hard. And mm-hmm. I'll not forget that at the college finals, you know, they have the big softball tournament mm-hmm. and he goes there to, you know, help the West Coast win or whatever. And he hit what was going to be a really close call of a home run. Like it was an amazing hit or whatever. And he comes flying around third base and he dives head first into home. And I wanted to go out and first, are you okay? Second, have you lost your mind? But that's like, he's always been like that. Like
that's,
but we had to win. Yeah. You know? And I'm like, oh my God, but he's used himself hard. And
yeah.
So anyway, yeah.
It's pretty cool. Now, looking at this year, what was the key to Taylor's success this year? Could it be that he's been through so much that his expectations or you know what I'm saying? That he's, you know, sometimes trials and fire is what sharpens swords, right? And so I'm interested from Drew's perspective and then Kendra's perspective, the mom, what was the defining moment? Like, did it kind of feel like Taylor had, I mean, I know, I understand this can change with 160. Look at there. Now I'm mm-hmm. talking with 160. Right. But when did you start to Drew first, when did you start to say, hold on a minute?
Oh, for me, it was round three. Round three, so Ketch Kelton has a way about him that's just different as young kids. And I know we're talking about Taylor, but Ketch has got this deal that's just a little bit different. And who knows what's going on in that kid's head, because I've tried so hard at the sports desk to get in there. Like, I try to get into those guys, and Ketch, he's been up there as much or more than anybody, and I have no idea what he's thinking. He just goes and wins. Like, he just does. It's just, maybe it's beautiful in its simplicity of just going and winning and just doing the deal. And so those guys, Taylor just looked like he had settled in. Like, there's a silent confidence right there. I knew Taylor wanted. I had talked to Lane earlier in the week about how Taylor was feeling and everything, and he said he's good. And you never have, like, I mean, you can kind of have a commanding lead, but it's not like you have. But I mean, Taylor was out front, and he was way looking good. He was looking good, and Ketch was always kind of right in there. But like round three, I was like, well, it's kind of his to lose. You hate to say those words, but that's, you know, just talking turkey. That's where, like, this is Taylor's game to lose. And if he stubs his toe, Ketch is going to be the guy. That's just kind of where we were at about round three. But I don't know, Tommy Joe, I keep going back to say, you watch these guys. I cannot tell you how much I love this event. I can't. So I watch these guys. I want to be one of them so bad, to be frankly honest. I wish I was out there. The only reason I'm on that stupid desk is so I get front row seats, and it means I'm almost there. You know, I love the event that much. And so to see these guys, you can see when they settle in and get that that thing, whatever it is. You know, anybody that's ever competed sees the guy that's settled in that's going to whip your ass. We've all seen that guy. We all know that guy, whether it's a rope and a bull ride and whatever. We know that guy.
Quiet you've seen confidence.
It. Yeah, you've seen it a million times. You can almost tell that he's going to cover that one by the way things have been going. And when momentum's in your favor, the guys that know how to ride that momentum and stay on top of it and have that confidence, and they've got all the preparation behind them, they've done all the work already. Now it's just a matter of finishing. That's where he was at. And, you know, I got to say this. He scared the hell out of us on the last loop and the tripping. But he, you talk about a competitor. He tied that second loop on that trip and steer as fast as anybody's ever tied a second loop. I mean, he ran down, everything worked out for him. The steer laid when it couldn't, but he made it happen. Like he pulled on the front leg and he made a great tie and won it by 3 seconds or whatever the margin was. It was not very much. Over 25 head to win it by that much was not very much. And it was epic. It was just flipping epic. Like, I don't know how else to say it. Him and Ketch both could have been a 60, and it would have fallen basically one or the other. You know, well, Taylor would have won. If they both would have got 60s, they still would have been first and second. So, you know, he didn't have to grind it out, but he did. And it made it an awesome, it was a photo finish. He pulled through, and you knew he was gonna. I mean, there was him, Ketch, Coleman, you didn't really know how that was going to go, but man, he's just such a competitor. You got to hats off to him for Coleman's got the best of both worlds. He's got the face and the fun and everything else, and then will beat your butt if you open the door for him. And I thought he showed out great, but
yeah. So now let's talk about, because we've all been parents in sports. You're fixing to go coach some baseball, Drew, and that's why I left the PBR, was to coach my kids in baseball. Mm-hmm. Mom, take your journalism. Mom, everybody sits in these games and the parents are thinking something different than the rest of the fans when their kid is playing. They notice things. You notice things. Drew, I bet you notice, he's favoring that hip. If he gets through the game, right? Mm-hmm. So Kendra, you sat through this whole thing. He just gave us the rendition from the sports desk. Give us a little ups and downs. Were there any? Were you, walk us through that emotion as a mom. Were there moments in there that, and when these people go back and watch this, because we're going to tell them how to find this and watch it, because where there's going to be people want to go watch this now. So tell me, Kendra, from your perspective in the course of the 5 rounds, peaks and valleys for mama, things that concerned you, things that impressed you?
Things that impressed me. Taylor, I'm just so proud of him. My main mom thought was praying for every single body's safety. Horses, cattle, people, everybody's kid. That's my number one priority. And I do think, I don't know how many miles I put in up and down the hazing and healing side of that Lazy E, but sitting down for it isn't really in my wheelhouse at this event. But, you know, like they talked about like miking me up for the last round or whatever. And I said, well, you're wasting your time because when I'm videoing, I don't speak. I'm not going to be yelling hustle or whatever. You know, it's like my kids are so much better than it, every aspect of life than I will ever dream of being. They got the best of both of their parents. Drew, for the record, Lynn and Taylor both have the same dad. I think that you stuck your something. Didn't you say something about mom and dads? Whatever. Anyway, for the record, for anybody who doesn't understand, Lynn and Taylor have the same dad, R.D. Carney. He's a very nice guy. He lives in Arizona. Anyway, Taylor, I have also great gratitude for the people who helped him. Alan Good brought 24-year-old Mario, the horse that the bulldogging horse Riley Wakefield won Pendleton on, I don't know if it's 2 or 3 years ago or whatever, and he hazed for Quade Hyatt, Riley Wakefield, and Taylor, but he came from, what, South Dakota? And Jake Clay, who's a past BFI champ, headed and heeled for Taylor, and he also headed and heeled for Paul David Tierney. I have never seen a better helper in my life anywhere, and that guy switched ends and did both ends. It was extraordinary. And I heard Taylor say in one of the interviews that in his lifetime, he's never seen two better switch enders than Jake Clay and Coulter Todd, and both of them were there helping. And there's a special place in heaven for helpers at the timed event, because it's one of those deals. It's like if you're a hazer and you ran 100 steers at Slack that day and you miss one haze, that's all anybody talks about. And it's the same. Jake Clay in Taylor's efforts, you know, Taylor said something about, you know, this guy, he made me feel like I'm a healer, you know, like he just, Jake Clay is as quiet as Ketch Kelton. And, but he, what a badass. Mm-hmm. And he's not going to tell you about it, but he will show you. And he just, I mean, Taylor put him in one sketchy shot, heel shot position. And I defy anyone to rope that steer quicker or more efficiently. And he handled steers, every steer for everybody. And he took the first available on every heel shot. And he was just extraordinary. So people there helping, it can be a very thankless job. And I think it might be interesting for people, like, how do those guys, what do those guys get paid? I know that Taylor was writing checks to his help on the back of the tailgate. And the way the percentages go, you know, you have five events. But I know that, like, his healer was going to get the better part of 11,000. And his hazer was going to get close to, you know, between 5,000 and 6,000. And, you know, so there are expenses that come out of that check, mm-hmm. too. But a fun little aside is that his father-in-law had the confidence in him to buy him in the Calcutta, and he bought Paul David and Taylor. And then I think he maybe kiddingly guilted brother Lane and wife Jordan into going three ways. But as it all ended up, I think everybody's happy. So anyway, it's just, and Paul Tierney, Taylor's father-in-law, before, it might have been when they were dragging before the bulldogging and then the steer roping at the very end. And Paul told Taylor something that was calming to him. He said, I've been high call here before. And the way I looked at it is the hard part was done. Now just go make practice runs. And that was calming, you know? So anyway, it was nice to have both families, you know, there at the end and everybody to get together. And, I know a few years ago, the Tierneys were taking family pictures at the Lazy E, but Paul Tierney has a strict rule that if you're not married, you don't get to be in the picture. So Taylor gets to be in the pictures now. It's a decent rule, actually. It's not a bad deal. So, but anyway, yeah, pretty fun times.
Yeah. I got a... So go ahead.
No, go on. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, back on the helper deal, you know, that's, so Jake Long, friend of Jake's, and we were so excited after he won his gold buckle this year. Like, I've always been a huge fan of how Jake heel steers. So he comes up to the sports desk, and he said it on the interview, but even when we turn the cameras off, I'm like, man, how is it here? How is it here healing? He's like, I hate it. I absolutely hate it. Like, I hate helping these guys because, you know, I've me and a partner, we're doing it together. We're trying to win the gold buckle. But here, you're trying to win them something. You're trying to win your guy something, you know. And so those helpers, man, oh, man, what a ton of pressure. What a ton of – more so than the guys competing, you know. So, and you can see it just,
at least if they suck, you don't have to have the conversation about splitting off with them later on. I mean, it's just one event, right? I mean, I think that part is good, right? Because it's just like, well, you know, just you suck this year, so we won't see you next year.
Well, and it was cool, you know, Coleman, who's pushing 40, what a showing. Mm-hmm. You know, he ended up fourth. What a showing. And we're talking about how quiet Catches. Well, Coleman Coleman, you know, they're all saying he's the future governor of Oklahoma, and that might be. And talk about bringing the house down, you know, he's outgoing. He's out there shaking his Branquino booty and having a ball. And Jake Long, you know, they've been buds forever, you know, and that he helped him heading and healing, you know, you get to see the world champion healer heading. And, you know, Coulter Todd, what he helped catch, and was it Kyle Lockett? And, you know, just stuff you don't see anywhere else for sure.
Yeah. So last year I got Coulter Todd on the sports desk. You want to talk about a guy that doesn't chat, but got talking to him about his partners, and it was really cool. He talked about how hard these guys work and how it's just your job. Like, just go do your job. Don't let them down. Just go do your job because they're working so hard. You know, when Coulter says something, you kind of snap your head around and listen because he's not going to say a lot. But yeah, it was very, very cool. And like you say, those guys, so forever, I mean, Cody Cowden, California, was one of the best helpers at the timed events.
Absolutely.
Hands down. Like, for years, he was the guy. You had Cowden help you because, I mean, head him, heal him, you name it. He was the guy. And it's cool to see, like, Jake Clay and Coulter and these guys coming in and helping and roping both ways. And that's the other cool thing about the timed events is, like, you kind of get to see another side of some of these guys that you don't ever get to see too. You know, just like from a fan of rodeo, you get to see these guys. Like, it was really cool. Tucker Allen. Oh, there's another California guy. They just keep popping up. So world champion bulldogger comes up and sits down with us, and he's like, this is so cool. And he's there helping out. You know, and you get to see all of these guys, and then eventually you might get to see him go and do something else. You've got Tyler Pearson there helping, you know, yes, helping with horses and hazing. And that it's
and absolutely. And some of the guys who've been there to help, for example, Tyler Worley, yeah, got his first crack at the competition this year and looked really good.
Yeah. Yeah. It looked great. Looked, yeah, absolutely great, you know. Man, circling all the way back to the beginning of this deal, that's what makes it so special. It's so cool. And hey, how about Wesley Thorpe? Like, I gotta give a hats off to Wesley Thorpe.
He was awesome.
He did great.
He did great.
He did so good. The rookies this year, and Kendra, you know the stats way better than I do, but I don't know if we've ever seen 10 rookies. I know we haven't since I started.
Like, well, I don't remember that. You know,
maybe three, maybe four, yeah, you know. Yeah. So having 10 rookies and the majority of them make the first cut, and a big handful, a high percentage of them make the second cut, make it to the finals, it was pretty awesome, you know.
Really
pretty
great.
Dang awesome, and good for the sport and good for the event, you know.
Yes. They did say they had a record ticket sales.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Record crowds, which,
yep,
is really nice, you know.
Yeah. No, well, I think half a prior was there, you know, so.
Yeah, well, of course. So, Drew, where can people that may not have realized that they want to watch this, where can they go watch it?
Roping.com.
Roping.com.
Yeah, roping.com. It's
And you can see all of it?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. I think they have it all broke down by go round. I'm sure they do. I haven't logged in here today because it usually takes us a couple days to get everything set, but I think they have it. They, you know, it's streamed live on roping.com, and then they go in and archive it all. So yeah, I'm sure. I don't think they do it by discipline. I don't think they cut it up that much, but I know it's by round. So
I did see it posted, and I saw, you know, some people asking. So just to clarify, is the timed event, is it free of charge?
It was to watch on demand. You have to be a roping.com member.
Okay.
Yep. So
just to clarify.
Yeah, on demand, you have to be a member, but it was free to watch up front. It was in front of the paywall while it was live, and after the fact, it's on demand. You got to just log in, be a roping.com member. So.
Okay.
Yep.
So, but there's all kinds of stuff on roping.com.
There is. There's a lot. There's a lot. Yeah, I think we looked at the numbers today, and I think there was I think it was 37,000 people watched it or something throughout the course of the week, including the Pro-Am and everything and the Junior Ironman. We got to touch on the Junior Ironman. Kendra, how about Leo Laux putting it on him all three rounds?
And absolutely a dominant performance. And I don't know him, And I really don't know James Mann, mm-hmm. who won it last year and won second this year, a kid mm-hmm. from California.
Yep.
But what I do know is that the calf horse he won it on last year, that was this year's horse of the Junior Ironman event as voted on by fans, the AQHA Horse of the Year. Holy heck. I'm like, wait a minute, what? That's the first calf horse Taylor ever made when he was a kid.
Come His on now.
Rooster. I swear to God. I'm like, Rooster?
Is that You're him? Kidding me. I didn't know no. that.
It's the first horse that Taylor made from scratch when he was a little cracker ass kid. And he bought him at the horse sale in Paso Robles. And I remember Van Snow, Cody's dad, saying, I think it's a pretty good buy. He'd like been a rain cow horse reject or something like that. And let me tell you, I can look out my window at our arena and have the memories. The only time Taylor and I have ever gone locked horns ever is when he one more'd me to death when it was pitch dark out there, and he one more. And I'm like, him and Rooster kind of had a little love hate sometimes, because Taylor, first horse you ever make, was of the mind that, like, if he'd have taken it like Scamper did with Charmaine, where she'd run 100 barrel patterns a day, it would have been fine. But it was to the point where he was a little on the edge in the box toward the end, just because of Taylor just wanted more runs, you know, for himself. But
yeah,
that horse has been a badass in the field start to finish. Taylor actually, because he just thought it was the right thing to do, ended up, when he got a little sketch in the box, he sold him as a trail horse to an older gentleman. And he was a trail horse in Santa Ynez for years. And then here he comes and wins the Junior Ironman. And I'm like, what?
You are kidding me.
It's so cool. And now he scores like his statue and still works great on the field. So anyway, first horse Taylor ever made. And I'm like, what are the odds? Anyway,
what a story. I didn't know that. That is cool. Yeah.
Pretty fun. And then
Horse of the Year. Did you see the deal? It was Tyler Worley's horse, right? That won.
I didn't see who won it for the time to win.
Tyler Worley's but it wasn't the same horse. So Tyler Worley got AQHA horse and fan favorite. So he won because the judges pick one and then the fan favorites pick one. And Tyler Worley, I believe, got both of those. And I can't remember the horse's name. I just remember looking at the paper and was like, is this right? And so, yeah, he had a pretty dang.
What is it? His heel horse, or do you know which horse?
I can't remember, Kendra. They showed me the results, and I can't remember. I wouldn't remember who won the timed event if it wasn't Taylor 3 days later. So, you know, but yeah, I do know that, because we were like, she had went down and Joey at the Lazy had went down to the judges and said, hey, have you guys picked your horse yet? And they're like, yeah, it's between this one and this one. And she's like, okay. And it was Tyler Worley, and I can't remember what the other horse was. And then at the end of the deal, the judges picked that one completely independent of the fan favorite that was, you know, the QR code and by the fans. So
must be a nice one.
It must be a nice one, because horsepower at that deal is also the key to success. That's for sure.
Huge.
Yeah. So
absolutely.
Well congratulations, Mom.
Yeah. Congratulations. And hats off to Lazy E and those mm-hmm. that are preserving tradition and putting out a fantastic product. What we want to do is encourage everybody, all of our No Spin listeners, check this out. This is, as it's been said, this is the cowboy. This is real cowboy. Evidently, most of them from California, but real cowboy stuff. And what an exciting event. And I want to thank both of you for filling us in on it and catching us up on what the timed event is. I knew it was five disciplines, but to understand kind of the metrics of it and how it works. And so kind of as a final thought before we close out for today, Drew, you were there the whole time. Moment you won't forget about this year. Now, this could be a backstage. This could be Feist sneezing a booger on your collar.
Well, it's I tell you what, you know, I put that post out on Facebook, and I'm a crier. I mean, I'm an emotional guy. You and Anthony
were probably up there crying, just crying away.
Yeah, just crying away.
Tissue
yeah,
to each other. Yeah.
Exactly. You know, so I'm a softie for the whole timed event experience. You know, I love Justin McKee's prayers that he does. I love, you know, him and Anthony do in the openings, like it, there's just something, it's very America. It's very cowboy. And I know that sounds cliche. I don't know how else to explain it. It's just, it's very, very real. It's very, very raw. Sitting next to Bob Feist, Bob is my hero. He gave me a crack at announcing the BFI 12, 14 years ago. And so, I mean, Tommy Joe went, like, what is it about the timed events? The one thing, I mean, really the one thing was when I'm standing up on that deal and Taylor comes back up the arena and he hugs Lane, I lost it. I tried to get on the desk and not think about it, and I lost it. I've got a set of twin boys of my own that are 8, and I know what good kids those boys are. I do. I mean, I've known them since they were little, and they're good human beings. And to see that brother deal, I thought about my twin boys. And so, I mean, that moment right there, I'll never, ever forget that, ever. It wasn't... It was because of the win, of course, but that moment right there was, you know, and they're both young guys that have young families, and then to see him bring his wife and child up there, I mean, that to me, that's what it's all about. Of course, when he ran through after, that's the most important part. That is what made it the, you know, everyone that you go to is the greatest one because it's the nearest and dearest to us, but that I will never forget when Taylor hugged Lane, because I love those two boys and it meant a lot. That was the greatest thing, and to see what he's overcome, and I'm a believer in the grind and the comeback king, and I like that kind of stuff. It's, you know, the Navy SEAL mantra, like, just get through this evolution and then we'll worry about the next one. And that's what Taylor did. He just went through it and it all worked out. And I don't know, man. Long answer, that right there. When those two boys hugged each other, never forget it.
How about you, the framing mare mama?
There's nothing better than that for me. And that
moment, that, also, the boys hugging.
You can't beat that for me. And then, but then, you know, when Taylor laid eyes on Bo.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's, well, congratulations. It's good stuff. Congratulations, Drew. Outstanding job, like always.
Thank you.
Very, very well done all the way through it.
Two really quick things. One, you mentioned Bob Feist. Bob Feist cut me the literal first check of my career for $50 when I was going to Cal Poly. So that I will never forget. I call him Boss Man Bob for the rest of my life. And two, Drew Stu, when Lane and Taylor are little bitty kids running around the junior high and high school finals, Drew Stu is running like the dummy roping matches,
yeah,
and all that.
Yeah, Helomatic super goat ropings.
When my kids and the Frost boys and Cody Snow and all those kids are Lane Mitchell, they're all breaking curfew and I'm like, where are they? It's because this guy was the coolest guy in town and is still running a stopwatch for all the matches, and they could one more. And Drew Stu would do it because he loved him even when they were little cracker asses. And I really appreciate it. Thank you.
It's pretty fun. There's a lot of gold buckles floating around from that bunch of kids too. You know what I mean? It's been pretty cool watching these kids come up. You know, that's what, Kendra, I'm the mascot for this industry. That's where I fit in. I'm a fan of this industry so much, and being to be able to do what I do and be around and watch these kids coming up through the ranks and do what they do, there's nothing better.
Thank you.
There's nothing
better. Thanks for being nice. It matters.
Well,
thank you.
Well, I appreciate that. I appreciate it. Thanks to you and the industry for allowing me to do this, because I don't know anything else. I'd be building shitty fence somewhere for somebody. So.
Well, I'll start with Drew. Drew's the Costas of roping. There's no doubt about it. He's the Costas, and if you know sports, you know what I'm talking about. He's the guy that you understand and listens, and you listen to, because he knows the sport, he lives the sport, he cries when the right guy wins, and he's the Costas of roping for sure. And you, Kendra, you know, this is a special time, and I wanted to do this one because, all the other junk aside, you're a mom. You raise those boys. You had to spank them when they need spanking. You had to be scared to death when they were out there at dark, still roping. All the stuff that us as all parents know. Then there's grandkids. And you never, I'll say this as in final parting here a little bit. I remember thinking, boy, if I can get my boys through high school, oh, if I can, I got to have the money. I need to get my boys through college. And then I'm done. No, you're never done. You never don't wonder if they got home safe. I don't care if they're 36 or how old they are. They're still your babies. You're never, Drew, you're never, those twin, from here on out, your dad, you're going to be nervous when you shouldn't be. You trained them to be adults. You trained them. You did everything to empower them to be successful. But I'm the first to admit, I never stopped being a dad. I never stopped worrying. And I remember being on the school board and watching kids come in and get accolades on school board. You know what? They might have a single parent. They might just have a grandma. They might have both parents. But you know what they had? They had someone who loved them, who actually loved them and cared. And that's the ingredient there. Two parents, great. It's great to hand off that toddler to the second parent for a break. I get all of that. But all it really takes is loving them. And Kendra, there's no doubt in any of our mind that you don't love deep. You've said it before, and love hard. So congratulations, Mom.
I really appreciate it. Elaine and Taylor are by far the best thing that will ever happen to me in my life. And now the extension, you know, of their wives and their children, it's just like, I am just the luckiest girl in the world. I really am. And so thank you very much.
And thank you to the Bob Costas of Roping. Oh, thank you, Drew Stu, for being a part of this. And we want to thank all of you for listening and being a part. And we'll just send it out kind of hey, Taylor, job well done, kiddo. Job well done.
Thank you.